Hey everyone, I'm Thanos Davelis, and welcome back to our podcast, The Greek Current, for your daily roundup, where we highlight the top stories of the day every afternoon with analysis from guest experts, policymakers, journalists, and health staff. From a new drug research hub to island incubators, Greece is starting to position itself for the fourth industrial revolution. That's the lead sentence in a piece in Al Jazeera by journalist John Psaropoulos, who outlines the key steps Greece is taking to transform its economy and capitalize on its young talent. John Psaropoulos, an independent journalist based in Greece and Al Jazeera's Southeast Europe correspondent, is with us today to analyze these moves by Greece's government, look at the new budget that Parliament passed on Tuesday, and discuss Greece's defense spending. John, welcome back to the Greek Current. It's great to have you with us.
Thanks for having me, Thano.
Can you outline the key steps that we've seen Greece take when it comes to this fourth industrial revolution?
Well, it's early days yet, and don't forget that this government, which was elected mainly on the platform of economic recovery and bringing taxes down and encouraging private sector investment, then had to deal with two massive crises this year. One was, of course, the coronavirus. The other was, almost simultaneously, the crisis of Turkey actively pushing refugees towards its European Union borders beginning February 27th and 28th. And I think the government has been lurching from crisis to crisis this year and has really had to just keep its economic reforms ticking on the sidelines. It has passed economic bills. It has really pushed the agenda of, for example, electric mobility, decarbonization. It has set forward an ambitious plan to shut down the coal-fired plants by 2028, which is 10 years earlier than Germany. And it does now cover almost all of its energy needs from gas and renewables rather than coal. It has been doing things on the economic front, but that hasn't been the focus this year. That's the area that's been fighting for the limelight. So I think the interesting thing about these announcements that happened in the autumn, one behind the other, we had the announcement that Microsoft will build 3 server parks in the Athens area. We had the announcement that Pfizer will make Greece one of 6 hubs worldwide for IT research. And we had the announcement that Volkswagen is going to pick a Greek island to start implementing a pilot project for electric mobility and mobility on demand. And that's going to start next year. These 3 announcements kind of brought us back to the government's original agenda and reminded us that there is actually work quietly going on. These announcements didn't happen out of the blue. As one deputy minister told me, I don't sit in my office waiting for the phone to ring and expecting it to be a CEO who's going to say, we want to build a factory in Greece. They are the result of active promotion of Greece as an investment destination. Greece is trying to tell international investors and CEOs, look, we've had an 8-year recession. The cost of doing business in Greece has come down. Greece has streamlined its investment processes. It's become much more investor-friendly. We have a surplus of highly qualified, highly skilled, highly educated personnel that you can have for much less than you would in your home country. And that message seems to be working.
You wrote on Twitter that Greece is working to build a new economy by capitalizing on the young and prioritizing the private sector over the traditional, quote, labor aristocracy of the state, end quote. How different is this approach from that of previous governments, and how transformative do you think this policy is?
Look, I think that the traditional Greek economic model, not just for the left, but also for right-wing governments, up until the end of the Cold War, was very statist. Back in 1990, when Greece ceased to be a Cold War front, something like 70% of the economy revolved around the state, directly or indirectly. And there's been a long process of privatization, but not concerted. It happened very gradually. And despite the European Union's calls for deregulation, for the state not only actively selling off companies that didn't have to be run by the public sector anymore for security or other reasons, but also because the European Union was giving money for entrepreneurs to do things privately. Greece was always reluctant to move in that direction and considered these sorts of policies neoliberalist. Now that Greece has gone through a huge process of building up excessive debt, more than 200% of its GDP this year, and failing to build up its private sector to generate the taxes to service that debt effectively, and now that it has very high unemployment of 17%, people are beginning to see that you can't just redistribute public wealth, you have to generate it. And there's a changing of course. I wouldn't call it a cultural change yet. Greeks are still not ready to be the United States of America. They're not ready for a super competitive economy. They still want the social state. They want social safety nets. They believe in socialized medicine. They believe in unemployment benefits and so on. But they also want to be prosperous. They want to have a chance to do something for themselves. And the dream of working for a government ministry or a state-owned enterprise or a bank is beginning to give way to the dream of actually doing something competitive. And that's the slow change that we've begun to see in the wake of Greece's 8-year economic crisis. I'd say that from 2008 to 2018, over that decade, we saw Greece simply dealing with staying afloat, keeping its head above water, trying to grapple with the raising of taxes and the cutting of public expenditure. But gradually, towards the end of that process, realizing that we need also to focus on the competitiveness of the economy.
The beginning of your piece focuses on what this could mean for the tens, if not hundreds of thousands of Greeks who left during the crisis seeking out better opportunities. What is the sentiment among these Greeks when they see the announcements of Pfizer, of Microsoft, and of Volkswagen?
Well, Thano, as a Greek yourself, you know that the ultimate authority in Greek culture is the family. And within the family, kids want to, of course, have opportunities. They want to become independent and make their own money, but they also don't want to stray too far from family and home if they can help it. And parents certainly want to keep their children closer to home if they can. So the dynamic of the family means that Greeks react to these sorts of announcements very positively. They see some hope of being able to stay in Greece and work here for fairly decent money rather than having to go off into Northern Europe. Population statistics gathered by the Hellenic Statistical Service over the last 10 years suggest that as many as 700,000 people left Greece during the crisis. Most of those were Greeks who were highly educated and were competitive enough to bid for jobs in bigger labor markets in Northern Europe, and some came to America. So the general reaction to these sorts of announcements is one of hope, but it's still very guarded hope. I think people still need to see things happening in order to really believe that the country's economy is moving in a new direction.
John, in your piece, you pointed out the story of a young Greek, Kristalia Saradopoulou, who had left Greece originally and then saw an opportunity to return when Pfizer announced its expansion in Thessaloniki. Is this a story you think we will see repeating itself?
Yes, and the Pfizer story underlines that. There are several people who came back to work for that particular company, some from Germany, some from the UK, and some from the Netherlands, like Kristalia Sarandopoulou, whom I quote. And I'm sure that that number will increase. But more importantly, or equally importantly, Pfizer will be hiring people graduating every summer from the Aristotelian University in Thessaloniki. And they'll be hiring recent graduates who've gone to set up startups in local incubators. And maybe some of those startups will now start benefiting from European money earmarked for redevelopment and recovery in the post-COVID economy of Europe. So I think we'll see the effect grow as the message, but also the money begins to flow.
I want to move us to another topic, and that's Greece's budget, which just passed in Parliament yesterday. According to budget figures, Greece is expected to see a 10.5% contraction of its GDP this year, before registering a 4.8% growth next year. What are the key concerns here?
The biggest concern, of course, was that because Greece was projected to have growth of roughly 4%, Prime Minister Mitsotakis, when he was elected in July of 2019, had promised or said he strongly would work towards growth in 2020 of about 4%, which he believed was entirely feasible given the conditions of that time. On the basis of that projection, the government then hoped to cut taxes. It did cut taxes preemptively in 2019 for 2020. So you had, for example, the corporate tax rate come down from 28% to 24%. And this year you had a slew of other concessions. The government cut social security contributions, which are among the highest in Europe, by 4 percentage points. And as the COVID lockdowns began to create new recessions this year, the government then realized it had to step up business-friendly tax cuts. So because it couldn't afford to further erode its own tax base at home, for example, because expenditure this year is going to go up by 12 billion euros compared to what was projected, mainly because of COVID-related expenditures. So because you couldn't really further cut your domestic taxes, the government started offering tax cuts for people to move to Greece. if you move to Greece, your income tax will be reduced by 50% for 7 years for any kind of work, for any level of income, for any nationality. And this starts next year. Tech stock options taxed at a flat rate of 15%. And there will be no solidarity tax. This was something invented during the crisis to raise more money. It amounted to a surcharge on income tax of between 2 and 5%. That will be abolished next year. And that was an electoral promise of the government. There will be a tax credit for digital capital expenditure for companies. Non-domiciled tax residents who move to Greece will pay a flat tax of 100,000 euros. And pensioners who move to Greece will pay a 7% flat tax. So the government is introducing all of these tax cuts, some of them for residents, but many of them in order to attract new taxpayers from abroad. So the main concern, to go back to your original question, of the 10.5% recession is that it may derail, or it had the potential to derail the government from what was a very ambitious agenda of boosting the private sector with a very friendly and stable tax policy and sending it back into the old borrow and spend economics of decades past. And the government is fighting very hard to avoid that. They want to maintain growth in order to maintain tax revenues and hope that that will create a virtuous cycle. That hope has now been transposed 1 year ahead to 2021, where Greece is expected to have growth of 4.8%. If that goes well, then I'm sure that this government's inclination will be to introduce more of the tax cuts it had in mind when it came to power.
John, I want to wrap up with a last question, and it pertains to the budget. Yesterday, we saw Prime Minister Mitsotakis say that Greece is going to be taking delivery of 18 French-made Rafale jets next year as part of a major 11.5 billion euro drive to modernize Greece's armed forces. And this obviously comes amid tensions with Turkey. Defense spending is a major part of this new budget. How does Greece look to spend on defense? How will this impact other plans when it comes to investments in other sectors?
Well, defense spending is one of those necessary evils that Greece has always faced because for so many decades it was on the edge of the Iron Curtain, and also because since the 1970s it's had to face a great deal of hostility from its neighbor Turkey, and that is now blowing over into a prolonged crisis. I think the thinking here is that we're going to be in a sustained crisis with Turkey for the foreseeable future, which means many years. So for the first time in 12 years, Greece is raising rather than cutting its defense budget this year by 43% to 5.5 billion euros, $6.7 billion. And that is to finance partly the purchase of the 18 Rafale jets. It's a very expensive program. I mean, those 18 planes will cost Greece $3 billion. And that's including giving back to France some of the older Mirage jets that Greece bought after 1989. But it is a fourth-generation jet. It gives Greece an edge in the Aegean, in theory, because it carries much more powerful radar and weapons and has a much longer range than the F-16s and the Mirages that Greece now has in its fleet. The increased spending also is expected to finance 4 new frigates, which might end up being built in Greece. And then Greece has to upgrade existing frigates and weapon systems as well. And there may be more weapons purchases in the future. I mean, I wouldn't be at all surprised if we saw another defense budget hike next year. All of this spending could be eventually related to the health of the broader economy. I think Greece looks with envy across to Turkey, which has quietly built an ecosystem of tech companies and defense companies within the private sector, but working under the auspices of the state, and has turned defense into an export industry as well. So the Greeks, who produce so many technical graduates and have such know-how in the sciences and technology areas, are thinking, why are we exporting our educated children to larger labor markets? Why don't we create an economy for them to be able to stay at home? And part of that economy could be the defense industry. That will take years to happen. But I think that the fact that Hellenic Aerospace, the Hellenic vehicles industry, and EAS, the Greek manufacturer of artillery shells and bullets and so on, the fact that all of those are being privatized now, they were all put up for sale this year, is not a coincidence. I think this government has an economic plan. They're looking for strategic investors in these industries. They want to turn them into growth industries, both for economic and security reasons. And I think that 2021 will be an interesting year in that sector, because you're going to see both a lot of energy assets that used to belong to the state and a lot of defense companies going up for sale. I think, therefore, in the next month, we'll have a much clearer picture of how the government plans to tie the defense sector into its growth vision for the economy as a whole.
John, thanks for joining us on The Greek Current today and for giving us your analysis.
Thank you, as always, Thano.
In other news, Turkey's President Erdogan said on Wednesday that U.S. sanctions imposed on Turkey over its purchase of Russian S-400 missiles was a hostile attack on its sovereign rights and that the move was bound to fail. Erdogan attempted to portray the move by Washington as an attempt to obstruct his country's rising defense industry and stressed that sanctions would increase Ankara's determination to make Turkey's defense industry stronger and more independent. Meanwhile, U.S. Ambassador to Greece Geoffrey Pyatt briefed Greece's Foreign Minister Nikos Dendias on Tuesday on Washington's decision to impose sanctions on Turkey. Finally, Turkey's foreign minister said a federal solution to the Cyprus problem is no longer sustainable following his meeting on Wednesday with UN Special Envoy Cenk Lüt. Foreign Minister Çavuşoğlu said that the Turkish side instead promotes a two-state solution. Lüt met with Çavuşoğlu as part of her task to probe the prospects of an informal meeting between Cyprus's two community leaders and the three guarantors, Greece, Turkey, and the UK. Lüt has already met with President Anastasiadis and Turkish Cypriot leader Tatar. President Anastasiadis, however, has made it clear that he is only ready to resume talks for a federal solution based on UN resolutions. That wraps up today's Daily Roundup. Thanks for tuning in. Thank you.